The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
We're on day three of the Gaza ceasefire. There's still uncertainty, of course, as to what lies ahead. A search is currently underway to find an estimated 10,000 Palestinians who may be buried under the rubble. Now, to get the latest on the unfolding situation there, we're joined by UNICEF worker Rosalina Bolin, who is working on the ground in Gaza. Rosalina, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I've seen the pictures of the trucks rolling into Gaza yesterday. Massive trucks. What can you tell us about the delivery of aid on the ground?
A larger volume of trucks is now finally coming into Gaza after over 15 very, very long months of relentless violence and utter deprivation for children here in Gaza. Families are in need of literally everything. They've been surviving in inadequate makeshift tents, in crowded, squalid shelters, schools turned into shelters. Children who have fallen ill or children who have gotten injured have not been able to access the medical care that they need. There's tens of thousands of children with malnutrition. So the needs are enormous. This morning, as I was on my way from Al-Mawasi in the south to Deir al-Balah in the center, I saw these columns of trucks passing by. So this was fantastic to see. And right now, I'm actually in the UNICEF warehouse in Deir al-Balah, where UNICEF goods are coming in. For UNICEF alone, we were able to collect 77 trucks yesterday, which is an important increase compared to the first days of 2025. Because in the first days of 2025, the daily average hovered around 50 trucks for the entire humanitarian aid community. And now we're talking about 77 trucks for UNICEF alone. They contain critical life-saving items like water, soap, winter clothes for babies, winter clothes for children, kits for adolescent girls with underwear, with sanitary pads, intimate wash. It's really a very, very broad scala of items because the needs are so incredibly high. There's two important things to keep in mind. Humanitarian aid on its own will not be able to sustain the population of Gaza. Humanitarian aid was never intended to keep an entire population of over 2 million people alive. We need the commercial sector. We need basic commodities from the commercial sector to be allowed into Gaza as well, alongside humanitarian aid. And the other thing I'd like to underline is that there's some support that children in Gaza need very, very urgently, and that doesn't come in on trucks. What I'm talking about is the incredible trauma that children here have witnessed. They have been stuck in this permanent cycle of exposure to relentless violence. And they've witnessed things that no child should ever witness. But it also comes with the realization that nowhere is safe in Gaza. You know, these children, they've had very toxic stress and anxiety throughout the war. They were acutely aware that their lives were in danger. They would talk to me about fearing for their lives, about the loved ones they had lost. So they need mental health and psychosocial support, and they need the restoration of their daily routine, of some form of normalcy, because they've also been out of school for 1 year and a half. And schools aren't just places for learning. They're also places for socialization and, yeah, and social development. So it's important that that will be restarted too.
Now, Rosalina, 95% of the schools in Gaza, we're told, have been destroyed and are non-functioning. Less than half of the hospitals are functioning. So I'm wondering about the distribution of the aid and the help for the children, some of whom have been displaced and are separated from their own parents and who are lost, really, how that is going to be organized. It's a massive logistical task.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for starters, the vast majority of children and their families have been displaced. And UNICEF estimates that at least 17,000 of those children have been separated or unaccompanied. The task lying ahead is going to be enormous because of the scale of destruction here in Gaza. I mean, as I drive around different areas in Gaza, sometimes I just have the feeling that an earthquake has taken place because there's not a single building that is still standing. In other areas where there's still some infrastructure that is intact, the infrastructure is very, very heavily damaged. The issue that you just touched on, the schools, for instance, indeed 95% of schools are estimated to have sustained damage, different degrees of damage. Schools are currently also largely used as shelters. So families have sought refuge in classrooms. So they're currently occupying these buildings. And there's also an important shortage of teaching materials, education supplies. But when it comes to really the operational challenges, the environment here, we don't have the environment yet whereby we can distribute without any impediments, because the roads are destroyed, roads need to be repaved. We also fear for an important degree of contamination of unexploded ordnance. There's been a large amount of bombs dropped onto Gaza, and globally the estimate is that 10% of those bombs don't explode. So that means that we can't just go into areas that we previously didn't have access to, such as North Gaza Governorate, the upper northern part of Gaza, which has effectively been cut off from the rest of Gaza since the beginning of October. There's also issues in relation to public order. You know, public order has broken down during the war, and because hardly any supplies have come in those 15 months. And because there's such a dire need of everything from food to medical supplies to blankets, these items have become very prized. You know, we've created a problem of scarcity, and we've made it very lucrative and interesting for criminal elements to loot aid. So we also need the restoration of public order. We need some form of community policing, civilian police.
Is the security offered to the truckers who are driving in? Is it simply that the scale of the operation keeps them safe? You know, if you've got a convoy of 30 trucks, they are far less likely to be looted. You know, traveling at some speed, as I observed yesterday on some of the videos, they're moving quite fast, and their sheer numbers might protect them.
So there's several sort of practical considerations. Indeed, if you have a large convoy that is able to rush through at a high speed, it's obviously very hard for people to try to jump on those trucks. But what we see is that the roads in Gaza are largely damaged. Many roads are not paved. I actually got stuck myself a couple of weeks ago in a UNICEF vehicle in the sand, because Al-Mawasi is a very sandy, beachy area with dunes. And so our car got stuck. That may happen to the trucks. Lots of the roads, they have holes in them. So some parts of Gaza, it might be possible for them to drive through easily, but that is not the case everywhere else. Also, what you mentioned in terms of sort of this looting problem being solved gradually or organically as more aid comes in, that is very true too, because the way that the scarcity problem develops was because no supplies were let in, insufficient supplies were let in, that the few things that trickled in were woefully inadequate to address the even most basic needs of families here. So if we do see this surge of supplies into Gaza, not just aid supplies, but also commodities from the commercial sector, that makes it much less interesting for people to loot it and then to resell it.
Now, when you say the commercial sector, you mean ordinary traders and merchants will be able to sell their wares. But, I mean, what will people use to pay for those wares? I mean, people have not been able to work, many of them, for such a long time because of the war.
Yes, I indeed mean commodities from the private sectors, from traders. They need to come in for different reasons. So the first one is because of the scale of the needs. The second reason is because very often we humanitarians, we specialize in very specific niche products. So for instance, when it comes to hunger, there's severe hunger throughout Gaza. UNICEF, for its part, we bring in things like ready-to-use therapeutic food for infants, mm-hmm. Plumpy nuts, high-energy biscuits. So those are items that are meant for malnourished children. But what children need in parallel is family food that is sufficient and that is sufficiently nutritious. So their parents have to be able to buy vegetables, fruit, dairy products, fish, meat on the market. As to your question, how people will pay that, from the very start of the war, UNICEF, as have some other humanitarian actors, but UNICEF has implemented a humanitarian cash transfer program that worked with e-wallets. We work with digital wallets. And so the most vulnerable families, they receive an amount through an application on their phone, and they're able to use that. They can use that as currency to pay for the items that they need. I've met with several families throughout Gaza, in Gaza City, in the south, who were able to use that cash assistance to buy nappies for their babies, for instance. So it is not impossible. It is important that the Bank of Palestine, that they are also able to resume operations. But we have modalities that we can use for market transactions.
Now, finally, I should ask you about those estimated 10,000 bodies that may be lying under the rubble, and when they are found and if they are found, it will lead to even more trauma, I suspect, for the poor people of Palestine.
100%. You know, it is just unimaginable what children and families in Gaza have lived through over these past 15 months. You don't have to look very far. The moment I set foot outside of the UNICEF compound in Al-Mawasi, whatever children I run into, all of them have stories of loss. I've met countless children who've become very seriously injured, many with lifelong disabilities. And the tragedy is not just that these children got injured. That's not where their suffering ended. They would then be transported to a hospital, but because the hospitals were out of supplies, the wounds of these children would get infected. And eventually that would lead to the amputation of their limbs. Like, if you get injured in Ireland, you go to a hospital, the doctors typically can stabilize your fracture. They don't necessarily have to amputate your leg. But in Gaza, children who have a leg fracture or who have shrapnel in their shoulder or in their arms as a result of an airstrike, they arrive at the hospital. There's nothing to disinfect the wound. The wound gets infected, and then it has to be amputated, sometimes without anesthesia. So it's just this endless cycle of very deep suffering for children and families in Gaza. And indeed, there's still many unknowns. Something that has broken my heart over the past couple of days is children coming to me and saying things like, oh, you know, the first thing I will do when there's a ceasefire, I will go home with Papa and Mama, and then I'll go to my bedroom and at last I'll be able to sleep in my own bed again. Or I'm going to look for the toys that I've had to leave behind when we fled. But it's heartbreaking because when I drive through Gaza, just the sheer scale of destruction, I'm very fearful that there's not much left of the homes of these people. Mm. And so these children are so filled with hope and with expectations and with happiness. So it's going to be a continuation of their suffering for sure.
Rosalina Bolin of UNICEF in Gaza, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.